Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Amazing episode today. We've got one of the, legends of comedy, you can call him, Dom Irrera. If you don't know that name, you should Google that shit. Look him up. He's been doing stand-up comedy over 30-plus years. He's been on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, several Comedy Central appearances, Conan, Letterman. He used to open for Rodney Dangerfield. Dangerfield partied with Robin Williams. He's got stories for days, and we'll probably have to have him back because we just couldn't cover it all. Dom is one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet, and to still be rocking comedy 30 years in and to be relevant and still making people laugh is pretty incredible. And everybody loves Dom. He's a comics comic. Every comic stays to watch him. Everybody loves talking with him. He's just so sweet and giving with comedy insights, and you'll see all that today, and you'll fall in love with him yourself, and you'll be like, man, I want to party with Dom. And then you'll try, and then you'll fail because he can drink. Follow Dom on Twitter at Dom Irrera, Dom Irrera, DOMIRRERA. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Brad Williams this weekend will be at the Comedy Factory in Baltimore, Maryland, January 30th and 31st. And then, of course, on February 1st, Sunday, he'll be watching my Seahawks dominate the Patriots. That's right. Shots fired. Tom Brady, you pretty bitch. It's pretty exciting, man. This week has I've just been watching so much Seahawks coverage and interviews and getting ready for the game. In fact, I actually am posting. I made a really awesome 12th man checklist fan prep video that's dropping tomorrow on my YouTube channel, and it'll be on the front page of funnyordie.com. So follow me on Twitter, of course, so you can see the link that I'll post to the video. I have some buddies who used to shoot a lot of my Adam Ray TV sketches back in the day, did some incredible special effects on this. I think it's going to blow your mind. And if you're a Seahawks fan, you're going to love it because it's all specific to Hawks players and Hawks fans. So check that out tomorrow on my YouTube page. I will be at the Laugh Factory Comedy Store and Improv a few more weeks here before I head on the road with Adam Devine on a big theater tour. We're going to Seattle, Nashville, Portland, Orlando, New York, Chicago, Boulder, Vancouver, Boston, Philadelphia. We're hitting 20 cities, I think, in 22 nights. Go to AdamRayTV.com for all those tour dates and times and cities. And then, of course, I think you just Google Adam Devine Tour to get tickets. It's going to be bananas, man. He hasn't been doing a lot of stand-up because he's been filming his show, filming Modern Family, doing movies. But we're going to hit the road and rip it up. So you got to come out and see us. And, of course, get your About Last Night merchandise at estoymerchandise.com, estoymerchandise.com. We've got a new shirt dropping in a couple weeks. I think you guys are going to really dig it. Of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Rate it. Give it a 5-star rating. Comment on the podcast on iTunes. Helps us climb the charts. I've got some really incredible episodes coming up here in the next few weeks. You guys are just in for a real treat. Some of these guests are, I don't know how we're getting them, but we're getting them. So keep listening, keep subscribing, tell your friends, get your merch. Those are the Twitter handles, those are the tour dates, that's all the info. So now, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special About Last Night podcast episode with one of the legends of comedy, Mr. Dom Irrera.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. What no podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's About Last Night.
It's great.
Yeah, can you hear yourself?
Yeah, I can hear everything.
Some of those fucking pipes.
Just softer world.
Do you like the sound of your own voice?
No.
Really? Do any of us really?
There's really not many things I like about myself.
Nice. We like to start each podcast on a depressing note and then just slowly build up to
Did
some positive.
Did you start? Is that it?
Yeah.
We started?
Yeah. And we can go back and...
Should I introduce you guys?
Yes. Absolutely.
Well, very funny guys. I'm not a laugher, folks.
What do you say? Your intros are always great when we do your Breaking Ball show at the factory. What did you say for me last time? It was
not last time, but the time before. I remember I said, you know, usually the last person on is considered the headliner of the strongest act. Not in this case. Adam's only going on last because he was late. Because it's breaking balls.
Yeah, yeah. Get it?
Yeah, yeah. Have you, you've always been that type of... you started in Philly, right?
No, I started in Miami acting. And then I don't know if you remember me as Rabbi and Fiddler on the Roof.
I believe I saw that production.
You were Dr. Tesla Einstein. Or Tevla?
Tesla.
Yes, he played an electric car in Elon Musk Presents Fiddler on the Roof.
That's a shame they fired you from that job. I didn't mean to bring it up. Just looking at you now, like you're sitting on your high horse last week.
Brad would be great in Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, he would.
We've talked about this many times on this podcast, how Brad will be a great Jew. Like Little Rabbi? Who would want to see that movie made?
Oh, come on. I mean, I'm just worried that if I was in Fiddler on the Roof, someone would put me on a roof and I'd get stuck.
That's sadness on the roof.
Sadness on the roof. Just the whole play is just me up there going, no one's coming to get me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's lonely up here on the roof. I wish I had more friends, taller friends.
Oh, Tevye. Imagine if we broke into musicals like they do.
In regular life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of would make life more exciting and probably not as depressing. Like when shit when the Ferguson verdict came out, like if people just started singing about how bummed they were about it.
Sure, if they all took the streets sharks and jets, just
happen. Justice, no justice.
Yeah. Although it would be kind of annoying if like you're in the ensemble and then it's like your fourth song of the day. Like all of a sudden the other song breaks out, you're like, ah, fuck, I gotta be in the background again. Like I'm tired of pirouetting. I'm sure I've said that sentence many times.
Yeah, wedding. Yeah, that's a sentence.
Wait, so were you a ball buster though when you started in even acting in Florida? Have you always been kind of
at camp, at summer camp when I was a kid? I was a ball. Yeah, I was always a ball buster. Were you?
Yeah. I mean, but it was out of necessity because it was that getting teased as a big kid, and then you're just like
you were a big kid.
Oh yeah, real big.
You told me you were heavy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about this on your podcast, the Dom Herrera podcast, Live at the Laugh Factory, which everybody should get because it's one of the best podcasts out there.
Absolutely.
I had Dave Attell on this week.
Yeah. And, how was that? I was just there the other night when you and Dave were on stage together, and it was fucking magical. There was like 20 people there. I'm like, you guys have no idea what you're getting to watch right now.
I thought the funniest thing was to show his lack of
improv
skills. He stood in front of me and did stand-up. Yeah. He stood right in front of me. I go, this is not an improv. You can't stand in front of the guy.
It's so funny because Dave's just Dave. He's not going to change, but it's great because who he is a phenomenal comedian. And
he looks like an Armenian bus driver, doesn't he? He does, though. He just has that look.
He's definitely gotten to the point in his career where he has the outfit. He has the Dave Attell outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's been wearing the same shirt for 3 days.
Yeah. He just wakes up every day.
Stank.
He just wakes up every day and goes, all right, so jeans, hoodie, hat, good.
I think I got it.
I'm good. Solid.
One more day. Who's it going to kill?
but you came from a big family, right?
I came from my father left when I was in second grade.
Sorry to bring that up.
No. I was just trying to give you the background. One of the first jokes I ever wrote was my father left home when I was in second grade, never cheated on my mother. He used to cheat on me, pick up other kids after school, take them to the zoo, take them to play ball. One day he came to me and he says, look, I got a love with you. I met another kid. For the first time in my life, I feel like a real father. I was on All My Children. I was All My Children. Yeah,
yeah, the soap opera.
I was an extra on All My Children. Right. Well, not an extra, on Under Five.
Yeah,
you know what Under Five is?
It means you got under five lines.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, so it means for the audience out there who are not actors, very few, very few of you know that. But I remember it was a big deal to get an Under Five.
Yeah,
you could go from extra to Under Five. So I was a priest, and I don't know if you remember any of the characters. This is like really in the 80s or something, where Erica and Tom were getting married, too, for any people who watch the show. And I was the priest, and my lines were, body of Christ, blood of Christ, body of Christ, blood of Christ. So, And, you know, and then there was smoke coming in. It was a dream sequence.
Yeah, okay.
Smoke coming on the floor. So I just started getting more and more, like, creepy, almost Peter Lorre. I was going, body of Christ, blood of Christ. Body of Christ, blood of Christ. Oh, body. Oh, blood. And we just got the giggles, you know.
You're going like full Transylvania.
Right. Oh. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but you want to be memorable, right? Like, you want to, exactly. That's the thing when you get those small parts. You're like, I got to make this count. People got to remember.
Well, none of it
priest.
Went on.
Oh, shit. None of it?
Not the goofing around part.
Oh, okay.
But one time, I was an extra in The Rich and Famous, mm-hmm. and it was Jacqueline Bisset and Candice Bergen, I think it was.
Wow.
And I was sick, right? And I was at Lincoln Center, and I was hiding in the bathroom, and I was sitting on the toilet with the top down, just sitting with my feet up, so the guy couldn't see me. He goes, who's in there? And I go, you know, like he knows. I go, it's me.
It's me.
What are you doing? But so anyway, he put me out there in the freezing cold. You allowed the curse on this?
Do whatever you want.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He put me out in the freezing cold, and I remember I was dead on camera, and she was Jacqueline Bisset was having kind of an affair with this young guy.
Yeah.
And they were right in front of me. But my head was right between them, my face. And all of a sudden, I started being conscious of how big my head was and my face. And I tried to not do anything. And by doing that, the director started laughing, right? He goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm really conscious of my face. I don't know what to do. Is there, you know? I said, take me out of the scene if you want because I can't help it. And then he eventually took me out of the scene, but I looked at the movie and it's still in the movie. Yeah, like
get
if
out.
You ever watched Rich and Famous, there's a scene where they go by a Salvation Army mm-hmm. Thing on Fifth Avenue, and you just see Mike Guido mug staring dead at the camera like I was just shot.
But like, here's the thing about you, Dom, is that you have that knack to even make those parts totally memorable, whether it be your part in Big Lebowski or on Seinfeld when you're the prop comic. You're just a naturally funny dude.
Like, look, I don't need you disarming me by saying nice stuff. If you do that, I've got nothing left.
Well, you know, I'm just trying. I'm just trying to make a move, Dom. That's what I'm saying.
You don't have to worry about it. You're a sure thing, pal.
There you go.
You're in. I'll do whatever you want within reason, within Cosby.
That's going to have to be a new thing now. Like, hey, so we're going to hang out tonight. We're going to have a couple of drinks.
No Cosby.
Do stuff. No Cosby.
Yeah.
No Cosby shit.
No Cosby.
Did you hear Jeff Ross's Cosby joke at the store last night?
What was it?
He goes, I was with this girl. I wish I could do it, Jeff. You know, it's kind of got that voice. And he goes, I'll just do that because that's as close as I can get.
Okay.
He goes,
like a high-pitched Ray Romano.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of when he laughs. And so he goes,
I was with this girl there, and I didn't go too well.
Oh, God, I'm going to stop doing that because that okay. sounds like a kid who's got some problems. But he goes, I was with this girl the other night, and she wasn't, it didn't go too well. She wasn't a fan of my Cosby impression. And you're thinking, why do you not like the coffee? Why is it making you sleepy? I put the roofie in the pudding pop. And then he just kept going, and people were loving it, man. And that was the first real Cosby joke I think I'd heard.
I did one the night before on my show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was, I was raped by Bill Cosby from the early spring of 1979 till the fall of 1986. And you know what bothers me? These big mouth, blabber mouth women who are ratting them out, which ruins it for the people like me who wanted to be raped by him. I'll never forget, I got to the point where I could only come when he did the Fat Albert voice.
Why are we such sick people that we will see that story just go, all right, what can I do with this?
Well, that's what we do. I mean,
yeah.
People know with any sense that we, you know, it's horrible what he did to women, and
sure.
nobody thinks it's funny. It's like
right.
when Tosh got in trouble on stage that night for saying,
"Yeah, I wish someone were here to rape you right now or something."
You know, that was my fault. That whole thing.
That was your fault.
Well,
why?
It was partially, but largely my fault because he came in to get something to eat with me.
Okay,
we're going to go next door. And I said, you want to go on? He goes, no, I'm done. I did two shows, and I had my own show today. I said, oh, come on, go on. No. So we were walking out, and Fraser Smith, the MC's on stage. I go, Fraser, guess who's here? Tosh. Isn't that exciting? And the crowd goes crazy, right?
Oh, God.
And he goes, you motherfucker, to me.
Like he didn't want to go up.
No, he didn't want to go. He just wanted
that's
to eat.
Funny.
And then he goes up, and you know, because he's famous, people took umbrage to what he said. And
right.
you know, of course he's kidding. I mean, I had to go on TV the next day in L.A. I go, don't you think he's a comedian? Do you think he really thinks?
Why do they take what we say so, like, of all the people to take what is said, like, literally and to offense? Like, why are we under such a microscope of, like, can you believe what this person said? Like, they're forgetting to put the label comedian in front of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, if, the Laugh Factory has obviously a big sign that says Laugh Factory on it.
Yes.
You know, obviously, you guys both work there. And Maggie, the new, you know Maggie, she's running the tech stuff. She called me and asked me if it was okay to put that online, that joke I just did about Cosby. And I said, yeah, as long as they know I'm kidding, as long as they see the Laugh Factory thing.
Right.
You know, I'm not even worried about getting sued. You can't, it's very hard to sue comedians.
Right.
Yeah.
For slander.
I mean, did Michael Richards get sued?
No, but his career got destroyed.
Well, I think he paid him off. What I heard was he paid off a lot of people. And I don't know, have any proof of that. And
sure.
Don't hold me to that in court. But I already he gave to churches and stuff to make amends.
Well, I think people come after comics because we're the people that aren't saying what everyone else is going along with. Like it's literally our job to find those news stories and go, all right, well, what's funny about this tragedy? How can I make people laugh about that? And yeah, if you take someone literal, like if you take someone's act literally, then it's gonna be horrendous stuff. But
of course, it's got to be mean to something.
Sure,
I mean, like they say, like Seinfeld is considered a very brilliant, like unoffensive comedian. Would you agree?
Sure. Yeah.
And yet he basically talks about how dumb people are.
Mm-hmm.
So you know anybody can get offended. I remember Bob Odenkirk
from Mr. Show and Breaking Bad. Yeah,
he came to see me with a couple other comedians. I was at Caroline's. So him and I had done this heckling thing, and I thought it was so interesting what he said, because he's heckling me, and I said something about chicken.
Okay.
And he goes, hey, man, that's not funny. My grandmother died eating chicken. In other words, anything can offend you.
Yeah, right.
Anything, you know, if you don't let it go.
Yeah, my grandmother died. That's incredible. Like, I guess everybody comes in with their own, like, set of rules for what's, like, kosher to joke about.
I was in San Antonio, and this woman, she said, I liked all the stuff you did except for the women things, you know. And my girlfriend got really offended by it. She goes, well, how can you? She said, the whole thing's a joke. Well, you know, and I hate when comedians have to go, only kidding, folks. That should be understood.
Yeah.
Either you're only, because somebody said this to me, they go, man, you're nothing like you are on stage. I'm thinking, what a bore I'd be if I was like I am on stage. I'm
right?
Fucking annoying.
Yeah.
I said, first of all, if I was, you would hate me.
Yes.
And secondly, I get punched in the fucking face for being wise to people, you know?
Sure.
Hey, nice shirt, pal.
It's too crazy.
Hey, there's my shirt bit.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the first time you've done your shirt bit on a podcast?
Well, you know, I don't know if you know John Manfredotti. But he was a comedian, and he did a lot of Raymond. Everybody loves Raymond shows. And he said that to me one day. He goes, we're watching football. And he goes, yeah, I did that bit last night at the Improv. You know, where'd you get your shirt, pal? What, did the Sears blow up? And he goes, I got nothing. I go, well, doesn't that tell you something? It deserves nothing. How fucking funny. I don't even get it.
You know what? There is that thing where it is the audience that is the true barometer of what is and what isn't funny. When a comic comes off stage, he goes, man, I don't know why they don't think, I don't know why they don't, why it didn't work. All right, well, it didn't. So
it didn't
it's
work.
Not good.
So it's not. They don't have a conspiracy against you,
right?
I was in Vegas, and it was the early days of the Comedy Store, and this guy Jimmy Brogan. Do you remember him?
Yeah. Well, opened up for Leno.
Yeah. He's kind of Jimmy's kind of a fuddy-duddy, almost like old lady kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I like him. No. Well, just kidding. But he went on stage. He was emceeing, and me and Harry Basil were on the show.
Oh, nice.
And he goes. I said, how's the crowd? He goes, they're so stupid. He says, they're idiots. They don't get anything. He says, but they'll love you and Harry. In other words, you're idiotic.
Yeah, that condescending shit.
When did you? When did stand-up start to become something you wanted to jump into? Or was it?
First grade.
Oh, shit?
Yeah, I was in first grade and at a Catholic school in South Philadelphia, St. Nicholas of Tolentine. And this nun... I was being funny in the class. And she goes, you think you're funny? You see how funny you are in front of the eighth grade, right? And she didn't realize that she was dealing with a kid who had something that, you know, comedically.
Yeah.
Right.
So she brought me upstairs to the eighth grade, and the fucking desks were as high as I was. Literally. You know, you remember how eighth graders look like men and women to us when we were in first grade?
Yeah. Yeah, that lasted until I was in 12th grade there, Dom. Thanks, Hessel.
But I did really well, and I had to work clean because it was a Catholic school. Right. But I did stand up, you know, like, yeah. I don't know what I said, but I got them laughing, and she was foiled. You know, she didn't know what to do.
That's
like
incredible.
Her whole thing and backfired, and I always knew that. I always related to those guys. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but like I would see Woody Allen and these guys and think, you know, like I was one of them for no reason.
That's
I mean, I guess because I was funny in school. But
what were you doing that got you the confidence in first grade to go, I can take this to, I'm tired of doing these first grade open mics. I can do the eighth grade Carnegie Hall. Like what was?
I don't know. I just.
Like how were you making kids laugh? Do you remember?
Yeah, just busting balls.
Yeah, okay.
That's, I mean, the Breaking Balls show is closest to me as, and you know, some people really like, kind of don't get it. Like Freddie Stoller was on the other night. You know who he is?
Yeah.
Brad, do you know Freddie?
Yeah.
He wrote that episode of Seinfeld where they just buy me lunch.
Oh, okay.
Jerry,
okay.
He, you know, gives Jerry the suit.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple things that I think Freddie got a little hurt at. And then he realized, you know, because I was saying just about how much stronger the show was going to be once he was gone. And, you know, like it was a good warm up for them and
right.
all this bullshit. And I mean, part of it was true. It was made it funny, but. He said he called me up because I realized the name of the show is Breaking Balls. You know, well, that's, you know.
He called you the next day?
Yeah.
You know what?
I just got.
Considering all those jokes you told last night, I finally had an epiphany.
I thought you were just being mean. I was on stage last night, John Campanelli.
Yeah.
Who is really a nervous, wreck, unhappy guy. It makes you want to hug the guy, you know? It's like, let it lighten up.
Yeah.
And he start going, I got to quit this. And he goes, there's so many people here that will never come back because of me. You know, what do you say to that?
Jeez.
Well, you have a point. Don't beat yourself up over it. You'll find something you're good at.
Yeah, just say true. True.
Yeah, true. True that.
But you've always been that guy. Like, I've seen you hold court upstairs at the Laugh Factory a lot. And I think comics... they naturally just sort of gather around you and just kind of wait for you to bust on them the same way they would with like a Don Rickles or something.
Well, you know what I like about that whole scene is that how integrated we are and how people just sit down. You know, you don't have to sit at the black table or the white table or the Asian table. It's like, you know, we just hang.
Was there a time when it was like that?
No, I'm just saying because people don't realize how they always try and pit us against each other.
Yeah.
And you know, I've had people go, you know, I liked you and him, but I hated another guy. I said, well, the other guy's a really good friend of mine. So,
yeah.
You know, if you don't mind.
Also, he's very funny. He's very successful. You just happen to not like his flavor.
Right.
But they always think they're making some kind of...
like it was a competition for them.
Always a competition and a grand gesture saying that they got to put somebody else down to even bring you up higher.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You were my favorite of the night. And it's like, okay, well, don't say that for the other guys.
I'm always like, Brad's right there. And it's he's the headliner. Like, stop. Have some respect.
I first started out, we were doing a gig at Yale. And they had a little bar by across the street from Yale, and this lady came up to me and she said, you know, really, I'm offended by the way you talk about Italians. I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I said, you know, I'm Italian. She goes, oh, I thought you were Jewish.
It's
okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Dude, Giraldo had some old bit, kind of similar where
who?
He would. Greg Giraldo.
Oh.
Did you know Greg well?
Oh yeah, of course.
And he was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
He had this bit that was like, people will like almost feel like they're doing you a favor by like when they find out you're, like, oh, you're Latino, or what was Greg? He was right.
He was Cuban, Spanish.
Yeah. It's like they're almost like they're doing like paying you a compliment. Like, oh, you're Spanish. Oh, cool. You look good. You're good. Yeah, I thought you were. Right. You know,
I thought you were El Salvadorian. Yeah. But
you look good. Good for you. You're doing well. Yeah.
Why not? You've overcome so much.
Yeah.
You know, it just hit me the fact that so many of my favorite comedians died.
It's depressing.
And they're not even old.
Right.
I mean,
it's scary.
Greg, you say Greg and Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah. You know them real well, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Mitch Hedberg was, you know, we used to work together. Anytime I could work with him, I did. I mean, until he started headlining. He was.
What was that like when he first, like, just hit the scene? I mean, was it?
I just thought he was brilliant from day one, you know? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I didn't know I knew he was bad, but I didn't know he was that bad. You know,
in terms of the drugs and stuff.
We were in Kilkenny. And
that's,
you know,
Ireland, right?
He kind of looked at me like a big brother, and he would go, you know, because he knew I was worried about his alcohol intake and all. And I'm a fucking drinker too.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm judging him. And one day he says to me, he goes, I'm not going to drink all day. I said, good for you, man. Just, you know, that's cool. The one day at a time, whatever theory works for you. He said, because tonight I want to drink absinthe, which is like, you know, it's wood alcohol.
It's like a hallucinogenic alcohol.
Right.
It's nuts.
He says, I want to feel what the buzz feels like from the beginning. I don't want to like already be high because I won't know the buzz.
Oh, God.
I said, well, I see you're setting your goals. Very lofty goals.
People were just freaking out at him when he first hit the scene. I mean, because nobody was writing. Like, he was kind of hung.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was really old school jokes with a young, hip look.
Yeah.
And a very interesting delivery.
Yeah.
You know, what's one of the classic jokes by him would be the, you know, I used to do a lot of drugs. I still do, but I used to too. Remember that?
Yeah.
I remember begging to get him on Full Frontal Comedy. I did the show.
Oh, yeah.
In the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the kid's fucking good. Trust me. And he gets on and he does that line about, he says, you know, no matter how much I realize, how much I practice tennis, I'll never be as good as the wall. You know, it's very weird how people don't believe me. When I had this show called Supreme Court of Comedy.
Yeah, it was incredible.
They wanted all these old fucks, Paul Mooney. And I go, what about some young guys, you know? And I said, I gave them Tosh and Russell Peters. And they didn't want him.
What?
They didn't want either one of those guys.
And now they're two of the biggest named stars on the planet.
But I mean, I finally got them in.
Yeah.
And Daniel, I've worked with him since he was a teenager. You know, I knew him from West Palm Beach. He was always good.
Mm-hmm.
He was good. I mean, I remember his first joke was, you know, my mom. I got a bad back. My mom says it's because I have such a huge cock. I go, I like this kid.
This kid's got balls and apparently a cock, too. It's great.
That comedy court show was great. It was you were the judge, and you had comics representing real, like, cases, right?
Yeah.
I mean, small claims court cases.
It was like, funny.
It was incredible. And it was in front of a live audience. It was like basically like the people who were attending the trial, but it was like they were like a comedy audience.
Yeah.
Well, and your banter with
the lawyers?
Yes.
Yeah. It's funny because my dad was an attorney, and I would watch him in court, and then to watch your show, there's not too much of a difference between lawyers and comedians. Yeah. There really isn't. And a really intelligent comedian.
Because of the theatrics of it all. Huh?
Yes. Yeah. It's an act. It's all grandiose expression.
Performance.
And in order to be funny, certainly with the facts that were presented to these guys, you had to be intelligent. Just the same way to be a good lawyer, you have to be intelligent. And comics argue with audience members all the time. So
yeah, they argue with other comics all the time.
Yeah, so we have to be quick.
Yeah,
it's weird how it's a very similar skill set.
It was interesting. You know, like an improv compared to regular stand up, it's different chops.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this was also like a little bit different chops. And one of the best I had on there, who was so prepared, was John Lovitz.
Really?
Well, he studied with he went and studied the case with his brother-in-law, who was a lawyer, and poor Kevin Pollak, who's very talented.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, he was doing like these old like impressions out of Alan Arkin and stuff like that. These kids, like, Alan,
right?
Go, like, Kevin, these kids are 17. Yeah, they don't know Alan Arkin.
So it's like a kid got accused of stealing a Slim Jim, and he's doing a Peter Falk impression.
Right.
You're like, maybe.
And he's
not
great.
Quite.
He's
he's extremely talented.
But the thing is, what's his name? Destroyed him.
Lovitz.
Lovitz destroyed him. It was like so. I mean, and Kevin and I, well, I've been on his show since and stuff. We're buddies.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, he didn't realize how prepared somebody could be, and neither did I.
Right.
I never saw anybody like Lovitz. And Lovitz was so funny that you couldn't even get mad. Kevin would say something and goes, shut up. Shut up, you impudent fool. Your underwear is sawed, you alcoholic fag.
That's Lovitz?
No, yeah, Lovitz.
Shut up, you fool.
That's good.
Hey,
you stole his Slim Jim.
I've got like 1.5 impressions. That just happened to be one of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was such a fun show to watch, and it's always fun to see. I think like every audience member just wants to be hanging out with comics and witness comics and see what those green rooms are like. And that show kind of gave them an opportunity because you guys were all bantering, but then there just happened to be this like a court case going on.
Yeah, well.
And I loved you being at the judge. It was very like symbolic of you kind of like in comedy because it's like everybody knows you, everybody loves you. You're always funny, and that's super rare.
Well, thanks,
to be doing
brother.
to be I mean, when was the first time you went on the Tonight Show? In what, 1989?
86.
What was that like?
Fucking horrible.
Was it really?
Terrifying. I remember looking into the hills at Burbank, looking back, and I thought, I just wanted to run. Like, you know, like in the cartoons where the guy runs through the wall. Like, just, he leaves his imprint.
Just the outline.
Yeah. I never get headaches. I had such a fucking headache. I was so sick because it was like all this pressure comes to that. It's funneled into that one moment, you know? And I didn't know if Ed McMahon was mad at me because I did an Ed McMahon joke for a couple of years before that because about Star Search.
Oh, shit.
And I found out subsequently that he was not only not mad, but thought it was hilarious.
Nice.
But the joke was, at Star Search, I met Ed McMahon, and what do I say to him? He's been in the business 35 years. Do I call him Ed? Do I call him Mr. Ed? Do I call him Mr. E, Mr. Eddie, Mr. You big, fat, lucky, talentless hump? kissing Johnny's ass for the last 30 years. Budweiser sucking, Alpo slinging, nothing. What do you do? I don't mean that in a bad way.
Just kidding.
Yeah. But, you know, but he came right before the show went on. He shook my hand, but pulled me towards him. But it was affectionate. But yeah. I thought, fucking Evan Man's going to slide me.
He's a big dude.
Right before I go
He's
on.
He's an army dude. Yeah.
But it wasn't fun. I mean, it was too much pressure to be fun. It was a relief to be. It was like the imprimatur of comedy in those days.
Yeah, I mean now you see all the different avenues that comics can make it, whether it be YouTube or podcasts or Twitter or whatever. Pretty much back then, it was get on the Tonight Show, have Johnny.
This makes or breaks. Yeah.
What did he do? Did Johnny wink at you? Did he bring you over? That was like, you know, all the rites of passage.
Sure, and then because you've been hearing those stories, that's in your head right before you go on stage. Like, oh my God, if Johnny doesn't wink at me, if Johnny doesn't wave me over to the couch, I'm done. Like, my career's over in show business.
Did you ever hear about the guy? I can't remember his name. He's a real drunk guy from Boston. Gee, there's an oxymoron.
Real Jew who loves money. Who's that guy?
I don't know.
Weinstein?
Yeah, never really narrows it down.
But he was on, and he was always drunk, and he was on, and he was doing pretty well, but he didn't follow the light, so he didn't get off.
Okay.
Right? So he stayed on for like 8 minutes, which, you know, it's a lot of time on television.
It's like a 4 or 5 minute set you have to keep to.
And so Johnny had to call him over because they didn't have enough time for the next guest. So it looked like from the audience's standpoint that he did great. And of course, they never had him back again.
Right. God. Oh, yeah. They're
waving to him and he's just oblivious, you know, get the fuck off.
Oh, my God. I once had a guest spot go on, and for those of you who don't know, the normal order is like host, feature, headliner. And I once had a comic come up to me.
Feature's the kindest word for middle act.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And this guy came up to me. He's like, Brad, you know, I'm a fan. Could I please have a guest spot? Do you time? I said, yes, absolutely. Do 3-5 minutes. The guy did 15 minutes.
Oh,
everyone was like waving cell phones at him. I finally had to walk on stage.
Right.
I asked him, I said, hey, man, give me a high five. He high fives me. I go, all right, tag, you're out. And then I just took the microphone. and then he got mad at me. He's like, what the fuck you had to do that for? It's like, you did 15 minutes.
Yeah, well,
Enriquez did that to me once at a charity.
Paul did?
He says, mind if I go on? I'm just going to do 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The 25 minutes.
Holy shit.
I said, Paul, you're fucking rude. I said, if you were doing poorly, you've been off in 2 minutes.
Right.
So you were doing great, so you did 25, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
what do you think about guys that really just, that when I see people that just don't, that run the light like excessively, and they either, at this point, you know, if you're on these shows, I feel like you know, and it's to say, I don't know where the light is, or, oh man, did you light me? Or just to not, usually what happens is people just don't address it. They get off and, if they've done well, it's almost like it doesn't matter.
It really pisses me off. And it pisses me off when people bump people. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody came up to me and said, listen, man, my wife's having a baby. I got to get out of here. Can I do 10 minutes? Of course.
Yeah, obviously.
Also, you'd be like, why don't you just go to the hospital? Yeah. Like, what are you getting these?
I was just using an example.
What are you getting these shirt bits out for?
I got this great umbilical cord bit. I have to try it right now before I get to the hospital. it's going to kill in the delivery room, but I have to try it out.
I remember having this argument with Robin Williams to be a name dropper. Mm-hmm. I said, you come in, fucking people have their own lives. Do you understand that their lives just as important to them as yours is to you? and you do 45 minutes about dick jokes and stuff. It's not like you even work on anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he got it, you know.
Was Robin, you knew him well too, yeah?
Yeah.
How would you guys, I mean, would you bust his balls?
Yeah, on stage. Yeah. We used to do improvs together a lot. But I really liked him. Good guy. Really, you know what I loved about him? He never fucking bragged. Never bragged. I mean, he
and,
would come.
And the guy who had everything to brag about.
Yeah, so I didn't need to. I remember Eddie Murphy would come in with his entourage and all, like he was Elvis. And he'd have guys with walkie-talkies ahead of each other. Eddie's coming. And this Robin would just come in with his pea coat on, with his hands in his pockets. Said, hey, guys, can I sit here? Yeah, Robin, good to see you. Nothing, not a bone of pretension about him.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just kept hearing about it at the memorial at the store, how everybody just, how good of a guy he was. And I mean, all the generous,
terrific guy,
gestures he was doing for people financially and just, you know, emotionally. And
I know, you know, I did a podcast with him. Rick Overton was asked me to be on, and then Robin found out I was on, so he said, can he join? I said, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And no, Robin, you're not ready for this.
I got this.
You got any more credits? But he was just so terrific. He was a guy like, in this group, the three of us, he would be okay. But if you add one more or two more people, then he had to go into his act where the spoon is talking to the knife, you know. That
right,
kid.
Right, right.
Oh, why don't you?
I was going to ask, when could he kind of turn it down? Because I feel like he's a natural funny dude. Like, all of us, like, we're having a conversation, but when a funny moment introduces itself, you jump on it because it's just how your mind works. But he could stay like that until there were multiple people, and then he felt like that was an audience, and he needed
it. He had that need. It was, and the thing is, we had really a lot of fun doing improvs, because I told him one time, he like kind of just ran all over me and just louder than me and all, and I talked to him after. I said, Robin, listen, if you want to do improvs with me, because I was in an improv group,
I was
in a really good group. I go, if you want to do improvs with me, you got to listen. I said, you're already Robin Williams. You're already fucking Mork. Nobody knows me. I said, so if you run around and talk louder to me and do this shit, it's just going to be bad improv.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do it. Yeah. Well, I don't expect anything from you. Remember saying, I don't expect you to get me something. I just want to do improvs for the moment of the fun. He understood that. And after that, we always had good improvs.
It's awesome.
It's so great that you were able to just, like, because so many people would just be caught up in the moment and kind of smile and nod. Be like, dude, just.
Yeah. What do I give a fuck?
It's like. Let me have fun.
Yeah. That's all. I mean, one time we were on stage at the Improv in New York, and he said something really fast, and they laughed. I go, that didn't even make sense to him, like in his ear.
Yeah.
Like in a low whisper. I go, that didn't even make sense. He goes, if you say it fast, they laugh anyway. They think they missed it.
I feel like, you know, I don't know what percentage of the time I feel like Robin Williams would do shit that people were so just in awe of that they were just like,
it's Robin, so it has to be funny.
They'd be laughing, thinking they
liked
get
him
it.
So much. Yeah. and you worked with Rodney a lot too, right?
Well, I didn't. I hung with him more than I worked with him.
It just seems like everyone's got a great Rodney story. That he was such a character.
Oh yeah,
it, like
you're all right, kid. You're all right. I did one of his last movies with him, and he was kind of getting grumpy, you know, in those days. Mm-hmm. Like he was like hitting 80.
Yeah,
and I said. We're doing the movie, and we do a shot, and this guy, Harry Basil, was the director. Goes, all right, we're going to take that again, and then we're going to move on. And he goes, and Rodney, he's looking to me for, like, sympathy. He goes, what do we got to do it over for, Harry? What the fuck? How many times you got to do it? I said, Rodney, it's a movie. You have to do it over. If you didn't do it over, then we could shoot the whole film in an hour and a half instead of 3 weeks.
Right.
Oh, you're all right, kid. Last time I saw him, I went up to see him at his house, and I knew that it was a serious thing. You know, he's very funny. He goes, if everything goes right, I'll be out in about 2 weeks. If it goes wrong, I'll be out in about an hour.
Till the end.
Till the end, yeah. He was always writing.
It's funny because you see the guys that do it. It's so funny that non-comics are able to look at comedians and say, oh, so when are you going to retire? It's like, we don't.
I know.
You can't.
How long are you going to do this? Somebody said to me, you're a fucking idiot. They go, why do you work so much? I go, well, you know, to improve. And to, you know, they go, but how much, you know, how much more do you think you're going to improve? I go, I don't know, but I got a long way to fucking go.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know.
Well, I love these, like, I love these friends that want you just to limit yourself and settle. Yeah.
Hey, why are you working so hard and trying to advance yourself and make your life better? Jesus, slow down.
Are those the same friends that pitch you bits? They're like, hey, you know what would be funny to do is do something about all this, how airplane prices are getting expensive.
That's funny, yeah.
You're the comedian. You make it funny.
Yeah, you make it funny. When I first started out, there was a guy, Turtle Tyrell. He was a fucking Philly alcoholic brother of mine. And he goes, I got something, man. He said, I think you can use it. You know when you take vitamin B and your pee's like orange and yellow? I go, yeah. He goes, could you use that? I said, first of all, the bit writes itself. So why would I be selfish enough to use it when you could start a whole career based on the color of your urine?
And you've been doing gigs, and you've been in this business for so long.
I've been killing. I crushed. I destroyed.
What's the strangest gig that you ever had to do? Because I imagine you've had your fill.
I went into a place. I was with this blonde at the time, this Daffy blonde. And we go in.
That's not really important to the story. You just wanted to say that you were with a hot blonde.
No, because it's part of the getaway.
Okay.
She was a very good driver. She was the getaway, literally the getaway driver. It's all these women. I don't know if they're Pakistani or Indian, but they all had those saris on and the dots in their
head. Right. Yeah.
There were only a couple men there. And I say to the guy who was the band leader who booked me, I said, are you sure you saw my act? He says, I saw your HBO special. I said, well, I don't think I should do that material here. He says, listen, man, I booked you for it. He says, do what you do. You know, it's, you know, I said, all right. And I'm like fucking dying up there. And then I said something about the cow, which I forgot was sacred to them. Uh-huh. It's this fat fucking cow, you know, something like this. And the guy stands up and he's clutching his chest. I'm thinking, this fucking guy's going to go down. You don't talk that way in front of my people. You know, he's like,
oh, shit.
Yeah, so I just like, I remember the whole thing becoming slow motion. Like, I'm thinking, I'm fucking out of here. I'm going to kill this guy. They're not laughing. They hate me. They're all in these dresses. So I'm like running out, da 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 da, and I and the guy hands me $2,500 with like a baton,
right?
and my girlfriend, I go the car. She goes fucking hops in the car, grabs it up, and I jump into the. I know, this is when I was in much better shape. I jump into the fucking front seat, and we're out of there.
Oh shit!
Perfect.
Where cows like in the rearview mirror, like chasing me with pitchforks.
That was good to make a gesture for the radio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great impression. And then you say you had that moment with them, but you're usually really good internationally. Like, you've done so many festivals, and you love going, like,
The Kilkenny one, right?
Kilkenny's my favorite, yeah.
That's
I love Sydney and all those.
Is there a difference between the audiences all over?
No, I find the biggest difference between which I don't play much, but some of the American South cities, mm-hmm. they really want a different kind of humor, and you know that's their prerogative. I mean,
sure.
I would change much more stuff for Columbia, South Carolina, than I would for Kilkenny, Ireland.
Really,
much more. Well, I wouldn't change anything for Kilkenny. They get everything. We're just not on the same wavelengths. You know, mm-hmm. What was that?
What?
You just went over like to spit and didn't spit.
Oh, no, because I had to sniff for my nose. I didn't want to do it in the microphone. So you want to hear a, like, you want to do that.
It was just the weirdest move. I don't know if he was having some kind of conniption. His head turned and he went.
Dom sees a midget's head move suddenly. He's like, oh, the magic's about to happen.
Yeah, who knows if two sniffs is before the coins start falling.
You know that they, you know, they bleep me saying midget on.
Get out.
On
Oprah?
No, on Jimmy Fallon's show before it was on NBC. Late Night Show.
Yeah.
And I looked it up, and it's not an offensive word.
No, it's not. I don't know why my people get so upset about it. I really have no idea. I don't get it.
Well, you know why? Because people get fucking offended over anything. I never understood people getting appalled by calling them a stewardess instead of a flight attendant.
Right.
I don't know what, you know, like, I don't know what the difference is. You work here. You pick up trash. You're nice to us.
You're the only one here who can get me Diet Sprite.
Right.
I don't care if you're wearing a fucking, you know, nurse's outfit or a fucking toboggan.
Yeah, I mean, like
you know, you're wearing a sled on your head.
Hey, that's what I'm you know trying to make a point. I don't care. As long as you bring me my beverage.
Point taken.
Point well taken. You know they say server instead of waiter or waitress now?
Yeah.
To me, server is more demeaning than waiter or waitress.
Right. 1,000%.
A server sounds like...
Serve me, bitch.
Yes, right.
Well, I added the bitch. It makes it more offensive.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I like the, bitch, to heighten things. That's improv.
You gotta stop beating our bitches. I was working in Montreal. I feel like a bragger today.
No,
sorry.
No, go for it. This is what you do when you got great stories.
I was hosting this thing called New Faces in Montreal.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest shows in the Montreal Comedy Festival.
Yeah, and this young black kid who really did well. He's from Brooklyn. I never saw him before or after. Huh. But he did really well. He did like his 7 minutes, and then he walked downstage left. I'm thinking, where the fuck's he going? Because it's like the furthest place for me to get him off.
Right.
And I like getting guys off after a set. Come on, is this thing on? Like, it relaxes them. Spit in my hand, will you, kid?
Anyway, don't make eye contact.
He gets up there and he goes, I just got to say something. Guys, men, we have to stop beating our bitches. It's wrong to beat the bitch. I'm not saying a motherfucker don't deserve it sometimes, but it's wrong. And then he gets off.
Right? And closer.
I go on, and you know, like a lot of people there knew me because I'm doing it so much. I said, well, that was very profound. You know, we didn't need that comedy set when the man teaches us. And like I said, the thing that's funny about him, he didn't even know that calling women bitches was offensive.
Yeah. He just thought he was trying to make a point.
Yeah.
We got to stop.
You got any water?
Yeah.
I got you.
We got to stop beating our bitches.
Thanks, brother.
And you've seen that kind of stuff, whether it be Montreal or in the Edinburgh Comedy Festival. Like you see the trends come and go. Is there any trend that in comedy you just don't understand? You're like, I don't understand why this works or why it's this funny or why people are so attracted to it?
No, not a trend as much as some people who make it and some people who don't.
Uh-huh.
Like why they have fans, what they do. You know, it's like,
sure.
I'll give you a good example. Ian Edwards.
Right.
Right. Now, Ian Edwards is a brilliant writer.
Yeah.
And he's a terrific comedian.
Sure.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. And I just don't understand why Ian doesn't have more of a career. And I'm not putting him down because he's a good writer and everything, but you know,
and
I can't.
He always works, but he should absolutely be more famous. And I think his most recent album.
Look, he gave himself
really
the bottle.
Well.
He gave me this pick of water.
No, this is. I had to get rid of it. That's better water anyway. This is some weird pressed juicery water. You don't want that.
But yeah, it,
hey.
Not defensive. I just got to put my water in my own house. That's never happened before.
That Spanish fly you gave me. Why would you guys want to put me to sleep to end the show?
Well, you know, have a little fun later. Sure.
You know what happens? Just speaking about learning about yourself the other day, I got walked in on. Do you shit publicly, or you only do it at home?
If I have to,
yeah. This was an emergency.
I'll go into a stall.
Yeah, this was an emergency. I was at a coffee bean.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible.
Somebody opened the door. No, even like jiggle shake of the handle. Just straight up, like they busted in, like they also had to shit.
Right.
That's never happened to me. Like never in 32 years of life, I haven't gotten busted in on in a stall, especially one that's like a single, like you know, in a whole bathroom where there's stalls. That's you know, you can hear them coming in.
Right.
This was just like you know, there's one bathroom,
boom.
So you only have. You know, door opens and you respond. And I literally go, no, please don't. I heard myself say, no, please don't, as the person came in. And then I start thinking, and then he goes, oh, fuck, and closed it. And I was like, well, don't act surprised. Like, what I was doing shouldn't be happening.
Right.
And then I thought, thinking, no, please don't. What did I think he was going to do?
Right.
Stab me? Take the toilet paper?
Shit on you?
Sit on top of me like I'm not even there. He's like, I got to go too, man.
Hey, well, maybe he's like the T-Rex, and his vision was based on movement. So you just wanted to make sure that you flagged him down.
But it was a sad and enlightening moment where I was like, fuck, man.
No,
like, that's because you want to think.
I'm in here. don't pull. I'm in here.
Yeah, you get to learn a lot about yourself in those moments.
What's sad is as you're describing that, I'm thinking, man, that has happened to me so many times because literally when I'm doing.
Oh, yeah, your legs are up.
Yeah, when I'm taking a shit, my legs don't go below the door.
Oh, wow.
So people don't know I'm in there. They just fucking come
that's
in.
Funny.
And then they always like. I don't know if they think they won a prize. Like they kick open the door, they see a midget, they're like, all right, what did I win? I'm like
a
five.
Cane with a little foot on it. Put down. Well, I had to go so bad the other
That's
night.
My foot cane.
I went to the gym. Oh, I went to the gym, and I didn't know if I was going to make it or not because I've been taking this coconut oil.
Okay. To dude, try and enough with weight. The bragging, dude. You yeah, can afford sweet oils,
we
man.
We get it.
So I go to the gym, and I'm like trying to lift weights, and I couldn't make it anymore. And then I go downstairs. I go, do I want to shit in the gym? No. And then I just pinched it for the next 10 minutes.
Oh, God. And continue to lift?
No, no. Okay. I couldn't lift. I couldn't.
I was going to say, it's coming out of there.
Are you kidding me? Dom's a badass. He doesn't want to waste time.
Yeah. No.
He's got shit to do, literally.
How's the lifting going and the coconut oil and stuff?
I got a bad shoulder. I tore my shoulder in Perth.
Huh? Bragging. There you go.
You know, I got these shoes in Paris. I was wondering.
When I was climbing Mount Everest, I really tore up my ACL.
I hate that.
It was horrible.
Those people, yeah. That's the passive braggers.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny. It's like when I was working with Brad Pitt, well, he was telling me, he goes, look, live your life.
You work with Brad Pitt?
Live your life for you.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that's what I'm trying to. I could have just said that, but I needed you to tell you who it came from.
Right.
Yeah. Those are the people I loved too when I first got here, the people that would tell me they were, when I didn't know anything about. I hadn't been on a set yet, and people would tell me these Hollywood stories, and I didn't know enough to dissect their bragging and know that it was bullshit.
Right.
When they'd be like, you know, when I was on the set of Notting Hill, Julia Roberts, I just remember her being so easy to work with.
Yeah.
And she never was selfish. She did the scene, but she was very giving for her other actors. And then I find out this person was an extra. And they were like observing Julia Roberts from afar.
Yeah.
Or maybe like, you know.
When Julia Roberts cast me herself,
well, one of the
out
girls,
of thousands.
One of the girls at one of the clubs, I'm not going to name anybody.
Sure.
She was telling me she was shooting something all night. And, you know, like I thought, well, good for her. She just came out here a year ago. She's shooting in the middle of the night already. Yeah. You know, she was an extra.
Oh, God.
She's not shooting anything. She's sitting there or she's walking on cue.
Yeah.
And by the way, which
is necessary.
Like being an extra, it's noble work.
Yes.
They need people to do it.
But when you're first starting out, you got to
act
get that.
Like you're shooting.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it's funny. And I am absolutely guilty of this. And I've seen other comics do it as well. When they start off, they say, oh, yeah, I've opened for Jerry Seinfeld. I've opened for Russell Peters. Yeah, right. And
you saw him at Quiznos.
Yeah. I used to tell people I opened for Chris Rock. No, I went to the improv. I did a set at an open mic night. He stopped by to like run his Oscar monologue. And I go, well, I opened for him.
Yeah, and you post it on Facebook. People comment. You made it, man.
Yeah, you made it because you did an open mic. Yeah. And Chris Rock happened to show up.
But you need that validation when you're getting going, don't you? Right? I mean, do you remember when you're starting out? Like the first thing that made you go, all right, fine. I'm like, that proved to the people who were maybe looking at, like, all those nuns who were like, you're not going to make it, you fucking bitch.
Good call back.
Well done, sir. Like, were they, you know, what was the first thing that made you go, oh, man, I think I'm a professional comic now?
Just not having to work anymore.
Okay,
you know, like
what were the jobs you were doing?
The last job I ever had was parking cars under the Brooklyn Bridge, a place called the River Cafe.
Oh shit!
And it was all these great. And I'm a terrible fucking driver. I would bang the shit out of these cars. I used to go pick up my girlfriend at the subway stop in a Bentley, and it was the kind where it's from England, where the steering wheel's on the other side.
Oh yeah, she must have been so impressed.
Oh yeah, this is the closest she ever got. Either one of us. But it was, you know, it was really a good job, and it was like before they taxed you on your tips.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I used to have like fucking two suitcases full of ones, like I robbed a dollar store, you know.
Holy shit!
But that was the last job I ever worked. I remember walking away from there. I tried to blow up the owner's car because he fucked with me. And
that was your exit.
Yeah, I hate being hollered at. His name's Buzzy O'Keefe. We're friends now. And he said to me, he goes, he would holler, you know, he'd just holler at people. And he threw his keys at me one time. And I go, look, Buzz, fire me or let me work here. Don't treat me like a dog. Don't fucking throw your keys at me. I had trouble with nuns in grade school hollering at me. I don't need that shit.
Yeah.
Just fire me. We'll be friends. Then he does it one other time. I go, okay, motherfucker. I get in his car. He had a brand new silver stretch BMW. And I locked the doors and I just floored it. Fucking, you should hear that engine. Big 8 engine like that. Woo, woo, woo. And he's banging on the doors. And he goes, what the fuck are you doing? Are you crazy? I go, I was warming up your car. He goes, I said, I told you not to holler at me. He goes, you're fired. I go, no shit. And then I said, come on, hit me, Buzz. I got nothing. You got millions. Hit me. I'm right here.
And he goes, no, man, because you shouldn't beat the bitches.
Callback City.
Yeah. Dom, you are responsible for one of my favorite quotes in comedy that I say all the time. And I hope this quote is actually you. I heard it was you. They don't pay me to perform. They pay me to travel. That's you, right?
Please tell me it's you. Yeah. I didn't even know that was a quote, though.
Yeah. Oh,
that's the thing. To me, if I could have people over my house, mm-hmm. I would hardly charge anything.
Right.
But the fact that they don't understand, the moment you leave your fucking house,
yeah,
and you get in your limo, and you get in your private jet, it's fucking hard. That's work.
While the stewardess is blowing you on your jet, that is work, my friend.
I hate that. I didn't ask her to wipe me. She chose to.
but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, that's the work.
Yeah, the fun part is being on stage.
How many days can you come in early for press? That's like your time, you know.
Yeah, it's and people think like, oh, well, you're a comic, so you work an hour a night. You work 20 minutes a night. It's like, yeah. No, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into that, and waking up really early for flights and traveling and having to live in hotels and things like that. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just some people don't realize, and it's just funny because that quote comes from you. You travel so international.
I didn't know anybody quoted me on that.
Oh yeah,
funny. Dave Attell asked me something that could be construed as hurtful, but I know he didn't mean it to be.
Uh-huh.
He said, "What happened to you?" He says, "You were like up for a series and this and that, you know." And I didn't. I remember. I forget what I said. I said, "Well, there's a lot of things that I'm thinking. What happened to me is I made millions of dollars doing something I love. Mm-hmm. Isn't that cool?" I mean, everybody's not going to get the Seinfeld series.
No. Right. Yeah.
I mean, like I said, when you asked me before about making it, to me, making it is a relative term. But when you don't have to work anymore, you just make money as a stand-up comedian. I told this friend of mine, I go, you're fucking always whining. Look at this. Everything in this house is bought through jokes. So how much can you complain?
That's incredible.
You know, he's complaining because he has to do a cruise. Poor guy. Some people save all their fucking lives to do a cruise.
Yeah.
Go on a cruise, you know.
It's funny how, too, you want that so bad, like that type of comfort and success. And then when you get, I mean, I guess that's good to have that strive for more, right? That's what keeps us going.
It's all going the way you want. I mean, some people are more interested in being famous. I'm more interested in being rich than famous. I'd rather have money than fame.
Yeah.
Any day, yeah.
Well, because why? Like, what's.
I just don't care about being recognized, and I don't care about fame. I mean, it comes with it, and sometimes it's nice when you get a better seat at a restaurant and all that, but it just doesn't... Money to me is more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'll never get like the billionaire money, but it, just the idea of not having to worry about bills and not having to just going into a store and not looking at prices of food or clothing, and that's freedom, you know?
Yeah, right. Just being able to go anywhere at any time.
So I suggest you people make more money and you'll be happier like me.
Well, you are a guy that continues to work no matter what, rather be. Oh yeah, we haven't even talked about that you were on Oprah.
Yeah. Oprah and The View. Those are two credits that I don't know why you're not brought up to every night.
Yeah.
I was on Oprah a few times actually.
Oh, shit.
First time was at least twice, maybe three, I'm not sure. But the first time was she kept quoting me, which was really cool. She goes, as Dom Herrera said, even on shows that...
What?
Yeah, even on shows that I wasn't on, she goes, Dom Herrera says, I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah. You know? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So when you hear that, you're like, God spoke to me.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that the other day because of how powerful the podcasts are now.
Right.
You know, like I did Rogan's podcast. I had no idea when I first did Joe's podcast.
Uh-huh.
I'm in Ireland. I'm in Galway. And this kid comes up to me. He goes, I watch you on Rogan's podcast there, lad. Fucking funny. I said, how old are you? He goes, 20. I said, oh, that's cool. He says, yeah. He says, tell Joe that I take martial arts because of him.
Holy
I said, that's
shit.
Just what we need, a drunken Irish kid who actually knows how to fight.
Perfect. Yeah, but the power of the this media is like, you know, global. And it's
the internet, yeah.
Because somebody just told me they were doing research on my YouTube page for me, and he was like, dude, you're huge in India. I was like,
really?
What? He goes, I think you have your most fucking... He goes, you need to get over there. And Raj Sharma was just telling me, he goes, yeah, man, I was over there doing shows in Dubai, and they love Laugh Factory, like comedians from the Laugh Factory.
I heard about that, yeah.
And he goes, and movies. He goes, dude, he goes, the heat was on. He goes, in some like green room of one of the shows, he goes, and people are like, oh, I love this movie. It's the greatest movie ever. And he was like, oh, it's my buddy right there. He goes, dude, you got to get over there. He goes, they fucking think you're the shit. And now that they hear some like my videos are big, it's like, you know, you guys want to do a comedy tour in fucking Calcutta tomorrow?
No.
Coming soon to the Comedy Cave in Mumbai. Adam Ray. Lovely.
I wouldn't have a secret Indian name.
Well, no, because I got to know you're Adam Ray. You're not going to be Adam Kripal. I don't know if you're going to do the beard or something. I don't know. Yeah.
I do look Middle Eastern when I grow the beard out. Have you ever had facial hair?
Yeah, for the rabbi in Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, shit.
Big beard.
Why aren't you bringing it back?
I hate it.
No mustache?
I hate it. I keep playing with it.
Yeah,
I
know.
I fucking hate it.
That's what happens. Brad's always playing with his beard.
I don't know. It just makes me feel like a super villain.
Are you gonna let that grow in?
Come on. I'm giving you the business.
I see what you did there, Tom.
Wait, so The View. Oprah, there's more there, I feel like. Oprah quoted you, and then she... What were you on for, though?
Well, one of the funniest things that happened, one of the weirdest things was I was on with Sinbad, D.L. Hughley...
Oh my God,
Diane something. I forget her name. A woman comic. I think it was the four of us.
Diane Sawyer.
Yeah, Diane Sawyer. God, is she funny?
Killer. 10 minutes.
Nobody makes your gut laugh like that, Diane Sawyer. I'm not saying Morley Schaefer isn't funny.
Nobody makes you laugh like Diane Sawyer. I'll take things no one's ever said for 1,000 hours. Right.
So we're on. Before, if you want,
we're supposed to do one show. Right. Mm-hmm. This is why I think I did three shows, because it was two and one. So as they asked Sinbad a question, mm-hmm. and Sinbad's parents were there, and he's bad enough anyway, he's so long-winded. He did, and he answered. It was Oprah turns to me. She goes, 17 minutes, one question.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they had to make it another show. Because he was so long-winded.
Tune in next week when Sinbad finishes this.
Finishes his story. His meandering bullshit story.
No shit.
Yeah.
So, well, credit Sinbad. You were on multiple times then.
Well, she was really nice. I mean, the thing that you talk about power.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think the audience was like 40 million or something stupid.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you think of the late night shows, they don't get anything compared to what she gets.
No.
And it's syndicated, so it goes on a bunch of times. And
now there's no network just, you know, replaying that shit. What did she smell like, by the way?
Stank up pussy. Stinky musky pussy.
You heard it here first, people. Oprah smells like stanky pussy.
Oprah has no discernible odor.
Yeah. I think she doesn't even need deodorant. You get to a certain amount of money you make, like your body just produces an amazing fragrance.
She smelled like the color of purple.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. The Goo Goo Dolls are coming up next. That's a moment when somebody says something, you know, slightly moderately racist and inappropriate, Leno would go, okay, that's all the time we got. We're going to,
What is the name of your podcast? Where can our listeners find it?
Tom Morera Live from the Laugh Factory. Both of you guys have been on it, right?
Yeah. It was a blast. That was the first conversation I think we had, real conversation, other than just in the hallways of, hey, what's up? And you'd be like, go fuck yourself, Jew. And other than that, it was like a lot of, you know.
So that's not true, because I didn't know you were a Jew, because you don't look Jewy. There.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Kinda. And people can follow you on Twitter as well.
At Dom Herrera. Okay. You know what? I don't know how to follow me on Instagram. What do you have to know?
First of all, you don't follow yourself on Instagram.
I mean, no, but I mean, how do people get that?
Do you have an Instagram account?
Yeah.
What is it?
I don't know.
I'll look it up right now.
Brad, I'll find this out for you.
You can look it up.
What do you? Your podcast though, people got to check this out, because I mean, you've had literally every. I mean, you know,
a lot
Burr,
of good comments.
Rogan,
Maron. It's incestual, isn't it? That we all do each other's podcast.
Yeah, but you know what? It's everyone's got a different flavor. Like, you know, this.
It's just at Dom Herrera.
At Dom Herrera.
DomHerrera. You have 2,027 followers, but thanks to this podcast, let's get it up to 2,030 people.
And on my thing,
what does he post though?
Naked women. Naked women.
You know what?
You don't have pictures of food, do you? You're not one of those guys.
No,
are you?
No.
No, he's got pictures of hot women.
Me and MJ from last night.
Michael Jordan?
No,
MJ from the left. Nice, Brad.
Michael Jordan.
Nice.
Like that one?
Yeah, isn't she cute? Look at that.
Oh, MJ's
no
adorable.
Makeup. Beautiful.
MJ is one of the prettiest girls.
She really is.
Yeah, she's just adorable. So sweet.
Now, is this going out live?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, so when you hear this podcast, go to the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, ask for MJ, and say, hey, Dom Herrera said you got some stanky pussy.
Stanky. She was doing that last night. Her and I were drinking at my house, and she would just go, stanky pussy. It's amazing. Of all the things that, you know how we just say things and sometimes they get catchy and repetitive. More than any other term in the world of where I've traveled, waitresses always say that to me. I mean, I'll have an 18-year-old waitress from in Sydney, Australia, go, "Steak a posa." They love it because it's so stupid.
And it's from what bit is it from again?
It's from the it's from the about black guys in the Def Jam comedians.
Oh, yeah. Right,
they'd be so gross and vile. And then they would say, "God bless you" at the end. "That pussy was so stinky, it was stanky. Stinky, stanky, musky, crusty, yeast-filled pussy. Hey, God bless you all."
Ladies and gentlemen.
What a way to close on material.
The legend that is Dom Herrera.
Yes, thanks, guys.
Thanks for coming, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
So, that's the show. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.